There are some mediumistic instruments in the world who are so finely and delicately attuned to every wave motion, that they can almost instantly, on meeting a stranger, strike the rate of his or her vibration in such a manner as to be able to tell his or her good and bad qualities without coming into physical contact with either at all. Each human vibrates a little differently, for in some, the rate of vibratory motion is very swift, while in others it is immoderately slow. In some, vibration strikes a happy medium, being neither too fast or too slow. In mediums, the rate of vibration usually runs faster than in those undeveloped for such powers. For one reason, they must necessarily be very sensitive in order to record spirit communication of any order, and persons of extreme sensitiveness usually vibrate with great power and rapidity. In the animal and vegetable kingdoms, vibration is much the same as it is in the human. As this great law stirs all life, we cannot fail to see it manifesting wherever we may be. When there is a communication desired by wire on earth between two parties when all conditions are propitious, then there must first be an even rate of vibration established in each receiving station before the communicating parties can achieve any result. Some spirits, when in the materialized form, receive a much more rapid vibration than they possessed in the material body, due from the current flowing from the circle. Then if the chance is to be a very quiet and constrained circle of sitters, the forms may simply be animated with a very slow and plodding vibration indeed. As an ocean current sways the glassy face of the deep and causes the water to raise itself into waves that grow and enlarge with redoubled energy each passing moment, so does the law of vibration stir into action all life and being. The whole throbbing pulse of every phase of life is brought into expression by this wonderful and unfailing law, vibration. As the tiniest leaf in the early spring peeps out to tremble in the soothing vibratory waves of the air, so does the mighty ocean thunder and sob, its great voice, shaking as it vibrates itself upon the human ear. A sketch dedicated to Daisy Dixie, Rogers, Dr. John C. Gulliver. As I come tonight to give my blessing to this circle, I feel an overpowering sympathy for the people yet of Earth who are having to go through with the wrongs and errors of your world. I was also, of course, a mortal in the material world once, and I knew the struggles of coming up through the world's strife, and growing year by year into what your people call a self-made man. My father and mother went to the spirit world when I was very young, and I was left an orphan child to care for and bring up my two small sisters, and one brother. But thank God, I never shirked my duty in the least so far as I was conscious, and in looking over the past I am thankful indeed that the loving bands of angels in the hand of God kept me in the true way. I commenced the study of medicine when I was very young, and in years worked my way up to fame in the material sphere. But all this did not please me, and when I found that there was but little, if any, science in medicine, I was disgusted with what I termed my wasted life. But after I came to the spirit world, I soon saw the good of the knowledge I had gained, for in my earthly study of the higher branches of chemistry, I had learned to divine the higher color and magnetic vibration of the spiritual spheres, and so what I had gained had now become valuable indeed. The Star Circle have very kindly permitted me to give his sketch of my experience. With my unchanging devotion, I dedicate this to one now on earth, Daisy Dixie Rogers. I am most earnestly, Dr. John C. Gulliver, peace on earth, Lorenzo Abba. Friends, war has been one of the greatest curses of your world. Nations have met on the field, while thousands have rolled their garments in blood, and gone down to soldiers' graves, often to simply gratify the proud ambition of designing men. There will come a time when nations shall learn to war no more. You have large military academies established with large proportions, where the science and art of war are taught and men are educated to wield the sword. But nations shall learn war no more. Other and more satisfactory methods will be adopted to settle national difficulties. Then peace on earth will hold her sway, and then forget his brother man to slay. Men will be so influenced by the spirit world that the great law of love will prevail and cement all hearts with the golden chain of friendship which shall bind the world together. We knows that the world will be renovated and purified by the spiritual forces. Considering, the foregoing facts and many others that might be noted, which will characterize that period. What a grand spectacle your world would present! Almost like the haven of rest, and peace would dwell and all would wonder with delight. This will be a season of great peace and prosperity to spiritualism. True, much has yet to be done. But when you survey the past you will be astonished at the rapid march it has made in the past 80 years. You may well concede that the coming century will far exceed anything the world has ever witnessed. We see how intelligence is communicated from one part of your continent and of the world to the other, as on the wings of lightning, but nothing has been more rapid in its brilliant career than the glorious truth of spiritualism. Religion, John Wesley. In all ages, religion has been the main motive power in the lives of men, as well as the historic movements of the world, and even those who are not religious are moved in other directions, and are quite different from what religious people call religion. There is in every person some supreme idea or principle or tendency which pervades his soul and his sentiments, and dominates his entire conduct. This attitude is a product of spiritual growth. It develops from facts that no being is an isolated creature, but part of a greater whole. In your physical world it finds expression in gravitation. Spiritualism has a tendency to develop in thinking beings, into a world conception which is characterized by more or less definite views as to the nature and purpose of existence, and thereby dominates the conduct of man. Truth is not made by man, but truth existed before it was found. Spiritualism finds expression in the doctrine of all religions, which is common to all in a certain phase of their development. The higher a religion ranges, the more it agrees with demonstrable truth, and the nobler will be its ethics. Truth is the best, the basic part of religion. And agreeing with truth, it leads to the right kind of action called morality. Superstition disagrees with truth, and leads to the wrong action. Spiritualism is akin to science in so far as both are devoted to truth. Science is accepted in confidence of its being the truth, and spiritualism means search for the truth. The methods of the search, and the results of it are the assured knowledge at a given time. Both spiritualism and science are devoted to truth. Spiritual science is becoming popular and is closely associated with the latest results of inquiry. Many are averse to spiritualism, and resent the critical spirit, and are not apt to forget that their religion is based upon the theories of the past ages. The more education spreads, the better you learn to appreciate the relation of spiritualism to the needs of life, and when the masses know that spiritualism is religion in the making, all antagonism between spiritualism and present religion, that antagonism will disappear. The way of peace. Dinah Maria Mulock. Great dear friends of earth, you must lay aside your cumbrous body. Then you are free. Then you will mount the chariot of eternal truth. A spirit leads the way. You go on up the pathway of light on and on, up to the eternal realm of peace and happiness. The beautiful gate stands open. You enter the city of rest. Behold its streets of shining light, its walls of jasper, its sunny domes and starry pinnacles, the crystal river. See these crowns, glorious crowns, more brilliant than the sun, those palms, whose greenness never fades. There are your fathers and mothers, your children. They come to you clothed with eternal youth and unchanging beauty. And music from the spirit realm grand orchestra rolls and reverberates and charms and melts away in the distance. Here is life. No funeral procession ever passed these streets. No orphan cry is ever heard in that happy spirit land. No widow ever weeps. There is your child, my brother and sister of earth. You thought it was lost forever, but here he is. Long-parted friends meet to embrace and love forever. No death here, your lamp is lighted and never goes out. You still live and love. There lies your boy, he is dying. Stoop and listen. He has a message for you. What is it? Tell mother I will meet her in the spirit world. Oh, what is spiritualism worth to the dying boy? Worth everything to that mother, whose heart went to the grave with her boy. Crime and bloodshed. Thomas Paine. My friends, look abroad upon your world, and what is the history of Christianity but degradation and crime? Look at the ignorance, the profanity, the licentiousness, the dishonesty and the intemperance that prevails, even in your own highly favored country. See the cruelty of the savages who roam over your western wilds. Contemplate, friends, the senseless mummeries and superstitious traditions of property. See the heathen mothers offer their own babes in sacrifice by throwing them into the river of the Ganges to appease the wrath of an angry god, rather than support their parents in old age. Witness the beastly licentiousness of idol worship, where crime and lust of the most debasing character are the highest adoration paid to heathen gods. In the general prevalence of ignorance, of infidelity, of fraud, of violence, of imposture, of licentiousness, you have too strong evidence of the truthfulness of these facts, and your first plea is for missionaries. Spirits are missionaries, no matter what position they occupy. Ashamed of his religion, Rev. James de Buchanan, M.D., Ph.D., F.A.S. It seems strange that some should be ashamed to be called a spiritualist. Spiritualism is a national religion in your country, and it is incorporated in the Constitution, and it is incorporated in the hearts of people who embrace it. There are a few Jews who embrace spiritualism, many infidels, and in the West a few Mormons, but the overwhelming majority do not regard spiritualism as a revelation from the spirit world. There are many indeed, who do not profess to be its disciples, and who manifestly are not imbued with its spirit, but even these acquiesce locally or otherwise, in the general sentiment of their fellow men. So universal is this sentiment that anyone who opposes it, even if very quietly, makes himself conspicuous by these facts, and unless he is a church member of some sort, he loses the confidence of his neighbors, and if his opposition on the other hand is public and blatant, he acquiesces at once a good thought, but not an enviable reputation. Everybody knows this, and it is possible that there are some persons who are convinced of spiritualism, who conceal their belief from motive or policy. At any rate, so it is, that the whole air of your vast empire is laden with sentiments favorable to spiritualism, and in this sense, this religion may be said to be national. Nobody loses caste by identifying himself or herself with it. On the contrary, a man gains by this an advantage for himself, and for others. Yet for all of this, there are men and women who are not its disciples who would experience a sense of something of mortification, shall we call it shame? If it were suspected that they felt any personal interest in spiritualism. These men are not fools, they are very sensible men, they are not bad men, they are for the most part, moral men, they are good citizens, and kind neighbors, and amiable in the ordinary relations of life. They have been brought up under the influence of Christianity, and generally declare that they have great respect for it, and that they admire it, and that they believe that your world would be greatly benefited if everybody were the subject of its power. Yet let it be hinted that they feel any personal concern for spiritualism and they shrink away. They will speak of spiritualism in the most complimentary way so long as it is at a distance and in private and with someone whom they think will never lisp it to anyone, but let it be brought near to them, and especially if it be thought that they have a spiritual interest in it, and they blush. They are ashamed of it. They will attend its public meetings and seances, but take pains to explain by saying, "Oh, well, I go on my wife's account." They will even aid in paying its expenses, but will say, "Well, my wife wants me to do this and I never deny her anything, when I can help it." Now, why is all this? Why is it that a man is not ashamed for his wife to be a believer of spiritualism while he is ashamed to be one himself? Is it because he thinks there is something effeminate about it, a weakness that might be pardoned in a woman but that would be unbecoming in a man? He will admit, however, that man rises in the scale of honor and dignity the moment he becomes a spiritualist, yet he shrinks from being regarded as one himself. What can be the reason of this? Friends, we leave the question with you. A Jew who is half a Christian already is never ashamed of his religion. If he was suspected of being a Mahometan, he would say, "No, I am a Jew." A Mahometan is never ashamed of the prophets, and looks with disdain on those who are not his followers. The Hindus, who are the most intellectually gifted people on your earth, are not ashamed of their faith. Why should you be ashamed of spiritualism when it lifts the veil and brings you face to face with those you once loved on earth? No other religion can satisfy that longing heart for another life. mediumship, ITS laws, conditions and results. John J. In cause, I am delighted to visit here tonight with the dear personages who form this delegation of the Star Circle. I have been invited to give something of my observations on mediumship by your good teacher and leader, Professor William Denton. While on Earth I knew practically nothing of psychology, but being a subject I was always very deeply interested in it, I have taken the opportunity which has so constantly and so graciously offered itself since my coming to this side of life. While I lived in the realm of Earth, I often thought and pondered on the other life, and wondered greatly as to the attainment of souls after death, for I always believed in another life than that of Earth, although I did not know it positively until I came over and became an inhabitant of the world that you call dreams. I often meditated, too, if the dead did return to the living and have converse with them, how and by what means was it accomplished? I knew that if it was possible for a return in converse, there was a way and means of truth and science. Gradually after the spiritual awakening after death, I began to be acquainted with many wonderfully intellectual spirits who seemed to come and go at will, to visit the different sphere, to even go to Earth and returning, tell of their missions of mercy to those still lingering in the troubled way. At last, I asked them by what means they found their way back to Earth, and the knowledge I gained by my simple question was that same knowledge which is today lifting thousands up out of the mire of destruction, want and deprivation. I have learned that as the earth is governed and controlled by certain laws of nature, so is the comings and goings of mortals and spirits in the earth and spiritual spheres. That each manifestation of spirit depends as much upon the potency of the medium or instrument, as the telegraphic message depends upon the tiny electric clicker which records so swiftly each intelligible message that is vibrated on its keys. Then if the wires between stations are crossed or down from a storm in the elements, there can be no message received. Just so with the delicate sensitive who sits for you in any phase of mediumship whatsoever, and let him be ever so highly and finely attuned for the very recording of each spirit voice or vibration, and let him place himself in the best of conditions personally, he can receive no message whatever, though there were 100 pouring in. If it so chance that the circle is crossed with inharmonious thoughts, or that there is a sudden break in that circle. For the circle surrounding him is the only wire he needs with which to vibrate, concentrate and fully grasp the waiting message. So you see, if this great current is broken by thought, action or spoken word, the little instrument will be inanimate as to giving off the messages you so anxiously wait to hear. In the more difficult phases of mediumship, known as physical phenomena, and more especially materialization, the spirit forms under these adverse conditions would not only fail to appear, but there is a possibility of injuring the medium, sometimes permanently. Many have really lost their earthly lives by some serious break of this nature, for when their inner sensitiveness is keyed up to its highest and the most delicate pitch to receive the spiritual, there is danger of snapping their vitality in an instant unless perfect harmony is observed. Mediums and more especially physical ones are, when in trance or spiritually negative conditions, very susceptible to all varying conditions of the elements. For instance, when there is an electric storm, it has a direct effect on the materializing medium if he is in a trance at the time, and many have received such swift and terrible shocks from lightning that it has proven their undoing. There are some mental mediums of such rare and sensitive development that they are able to forecast and prophesy the wars of the elements by the vibratory power which a storm carries before it. For whole days together, some of these sensitives will feel the great and wearying depression of a storm. Many of your greatest earthquakes and disasters of every description have been forecasted by these valuable prophets. Many men of state have kept a sensitive close at hand, and through the advice of such has the important affairs of many a nation hung. There is a certain phase of mediumship possessed by but very few, in which the possessor is able at will to grasp in his naked hands a bar of red-hot iron, without hurt or harm in any way. This explanation will take away some of the mystery of it. When a medium for this phase of manifestation wishes to perform his almost mystical wonders, he instantly fixes his thought on a strong band of spirits which are invoked by him, and in the harmony of their thought and common natures, They are able to form a strong spiritual battery to use something similar to a wall, and then they place between their medium's hands and the red-hot iron a veil of radiant matter which not only protects his hands from all harm but strengthens him and quickens all his faculties, and many repetitions of this feat only makes him much more physically and mentally powerful. But strange as it may seem, more especially mediums of this phase are naturally mentally weak and physically strong and rugged. They usually have no refined tastes whatever, are not attracted by the beautiful, are satisfied with a very little in life, and are somewhat lazy. In short, they are dolts. On the other hand, there is a class of mediums who live and move entirely in the ethereal, the beautiful, the mystical, the purely ideal. These are the people of earth who move among their kind with majestic tread, daily sacrifice and kindness, and with the saintly countenances of the saints of old. Their material as well as their spiritual lives are blessed with almost constant revelations of spirit. They are ever fair and charitable to all humanity. Self-sacrifice is their first virtue among many. There are some physical mediums who are in trance condition so much of their lives that when they are normal, their manners are very eccentric and they give up their individuality so much that at last they lose the charm of it entirely. But each has a specific work to perform, a mission to accomplish, and they alone are able to do these labors. As much as they are criticized by the cold and cruel hearts of the worldly minded, yet if they were entirely swept away, what would the heart of sorrowing humanity do without them? They are God's messengers to a sorrowful world to bring light where there is darkness, joy in place of sadness, happiness to fill the heart which was void. Spiritual nature. Robert Fulton. Friends, do not go through your world scattering groans and sighs and whines, and bewailings on every side. Carry with you joy and smiles and sunshine. Do not let raspings and irritations of your world rob you of the bright and cheerful side of your life. You may use sorrow when it inspires you with a tender and all-embracing sympathy with your fellow sufferers. Suffering borne and uncomplainingly endured so purifies and enriches the spiritual nature as to render you true interpreters of the profound mystery of the incarnation of the soul. You may think you are profoundly versed in all philosophy, and yet when spiritualism is mentioned, it staggers you. Few people have learned to use their own thinking faculties, but allowed others to think for them in a matter of religion. When you deny the right that has been given you by your all-wise teacher and leader, you abuse yourself by allowing others to think for you. If you use your own reasoning faculties in other lines, why not use them in spiritual matters as well? We don't ask you to accept spiritualism unless it appeals to your inner consciousness. If mathematics is true, then spiritual manifestations are true, because the proof that it claims can be demonstrated. Then to assert that mathematics is not true, and is not a fact, because you are not versed in that branch, is preposterous. Now, friends, study and investigate this matter as you would steam. Someone might ask you the question, is genuine steam visible or not visible? What would you answer? You, not having investigated it or studied on that line, would say in my inexperience, or lack of investigation, that steam was visible. No, my friends, genuine steam is not visible, for you cannot see it. It is in darkness and invisible to your material condition, but you see condensed steam, that is, not genuine steam. You see the wonderful manifestation of genuine steam as it propels the massive iron horse over your country. Truth T.J. Poor dear friends of earth, spiritualism is a religion for the fair-minded. It unfolds the truth in full. It is larger than any of your means of measurement, greater than all your definitions. It gives you an assurance and hope that life has an everlasting and endless existence as you face forward into truth. It gives you the right and the best that is coming to you. This means to make the best out of earth life and rational development, to accept the universe as part of life and growth. To believe that the highest hopes that have thrilled the breasts of men, hopes for freedom, justice, love and right, hopes for a better and nobler world and a diviner purpose that run through all time. The truth for the fair-minded and honest ones holds that it is better to spend your days seeking out and enlarging your conception of it, and clearing away the ignorance and superstitions that seem far off, faint and dim, than to wear your life and energy away in following the footsteps of your ancestors of long ago. If you will find the divine light of all light, it will be in the living present and the divine future, rather than in the dead past. As truth plants its feet on ascertained facts, it can conceive of no conflict between truth in one form, and truth in another. But faith would rather be lost in reverencing the fact, than saved by some contact of credence in a pious fiction. There is no short and narrow road to truth. A religion that is afraid of facts results in a character without stability because based on untruth, on conjecture, or on deceit. But a religion that will point out the way of truth, and light, and make you better men and women, don't you think, my friends, that it is good enough to live by and die by? This is the truth of spiritualism, pure and simple. To the traveler on his way, comes, to a sense of fellowship with all who have lived this truth, a consciousness of the homeward march into a right living, into a richer world, a nobler heaven than earth. The way has more light before than behind, and the best is yet to come. Here is a truth worthwhile to know that is moving you all, working through you all. The great spirit of life and truth that which leads you all into clearer views of truth, better knowledge of the ways of life, clearer visions of faces of one another, deeper love for one another and nobler living until you shall cross into the valley of the shadow of death where you are born to a new life. We wish you to know that there is a world of orderly progress, that here all things work together for the good of all, not for petty prizes of the present alone, to be confident that your living is a highway and not a fool's dream. The God of Nature, Dr. Reed, friends, you can safely assume that the God of Nature who gave you existence, who gave you such exalted rank in the scale of intelligent beings and bestowed upon you such wonderful powers, designed you for a noble destiny, and a mission for you to fulfill, corresponding to the powers bestowed upon you, a work for you to do that is commensurate with your capacities, opportunities and facilities. To mortal beings constituted as you are, what can be more afflicting than to witness the expiring struggles of those you love? To see the eye become dim and glassy, and the face ghastly and pale in death, is under any circumstances, the greatest calamity that can afflict the human race. When death invades your family circle, you have the consolation of knowing that they don't die, but still live on and on for ages. Where is there another doctrine that can bring consolation to the sorrowing heart? When the parents who watched over you in the helpless hours of infancy, passed down into the valley of the shadow of death, when the wife of your bosom faded away under power of disease, until cold in death you laid her away beneath the clods of earth, when the husband of your choice was stricken down in the bloom of life, and left you alone to toil in all the woes of widowhood, when that little prattler upon whose fair brow you so often imprinted the kiss of paternal affections, wilted like a rosebud, plucked from its parent stem, and the gloomy grave closed his mouth on all that seemed worth living for, you have the consolation that there is no death. The God of Nature never intended for its children of earth to remain in ignorance and superstition as to a future life. As you stand by the grave of loved ones now sleeping in death, you turn and ask with aching heart, "Do they live and shall I see them again? Is it well with the lost but loved ones of my heart?" But no kind response from the minister, only "It is well," was heard in reply. Her lips were sealed in silence as mournfully she turned away and left you alone in your sorrow. You then turned to infidelity, and at the boasted shrine of reason asked the startling question, "If a man die, shall he live again?" But you found in infidelity the answer, "Number death is an eternal sleep." Overwhelmed with grief and sorrow, you were about sinking in despair, when a being came to you, and while supporting you with one hand, and wiping away your tears with the other, she whispered in your ear in sweet tones, "Your loved ones still live, and the hour is coming, when you shall hear the voice of those you once loved, and tell you of their beautiful home." Do you think that the God of Nature, who has planned man's existence on earth so perfectly and obediently to the law of nature, will deprive his children of earth of ever meeting those who have crossed to the great beyond? No, my friends, nature has made no such mistake. If it is possible for you to exist in a material form, which you know it is, then it must be possible for you to exist in a spiritual form, for one is no more difficult than the other to accomplish, So my friends, how are you going to deny this fact? To deny it would be to deny your own existence, and that you cannot do, unless you are bereft of all sense. Dormant faculties. Professor Denton, you say that you must make the most of life, to seize opportunities when they come, that all your faculties should be trained,